one of the largest crowds or turnouts, I should say, for public hearings this week and so far in the legislative session had to do with the bill that is an act concerning a provision of equivalent instruction, Bill 5468. And it was in front of the Education Committee this week. And I really wanted the chance to talk to Representative Jen Leeper, who is the chair of the committee from right here in the Fairfield area, to really discuss this and the concerns that people have around it. Representative Leeper, always appreciate getting your time here on WICC. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me, Melissa.
So I want to start with just your kind of take on this bill. I don't want to, you know, put words in your mouth, but I would imagine you support it or no?
Yeah, I think it's a really important conversation to have. Of course, after having two really high profile cases last year of child neglect and abuse, we were looking at how such a thing could happen in our system and realized we're one of 12 states across the country with no regulations, no oversight, no enforcement around homeschooling. So what we saw is, of course, not people actively homeschooling, but using sort of this loophole in our law where there's no follow-up on children to claim to be homeschooling, to pull their child out of school after they've been involved with the Department of Children and Families, and then there's really no access to those kids again. So we're looking at that and seeing how can we find the balance that strikes the right balance, if you will, between parents' rights and responsibilities and also the rights of children.
And I've got to be honest with you, Representative Leeper. I myself do not have a child who's you know, taught at home. He is in the public schools, but I was saying, actually, I had Senator Perillo on my show earlier this week, and I was saying to him, I kind of pushed back on the idea of it will cost a lot more to have schools report to DCF, or that it is attacking the homeschooling community, because I was actually making note of the fact that I learned last year, having a kid in the public schools, that if your kid misses 10 days of school or more, which mine did, that DCF does have to get involved. The school lets us know that that we need an explanation as to why Chase missed more than 10 days of school, and DCF would have to be involved in that. And so I was saying, you know, from a public school standpoint, there is a check-in with DCF, you know, just on absentees. So logically, I think it kind of makes sense to just have that step, and I don't see why that kind of reporting is such a problem. So I agree with what you're saying. The part that became...
I really appreciate that.
Well, you're welcome. I am not saying that this is not a personal, that this is not emotional for people or personal. We love our kids, right? So I get it. I'm a mama bear through and through. I totally understand it. And people have the rights to educate their kids how they want to. I think that's fair. I don't love the idea that because we had horrible situations happen that I feel bad that the homeschooling community feels like they're scapegoated. I don't want them to feel that way. They shouldn't. I think when these things happen, though, if we could look at very basic changes like a school letting the Department of Ed know, letting DCF know, hey, does this child come from a family that has a case, even if it's not active, but a past case with DCF? That just, to me, seems logical. And I don't see why that would cost a lot more money or be a bigger deal. Like I said, because we do already deal with DCF if kids miss school and your kid is in the public school. So that part I understand. The equivalent instruction, though, it was sort of made out to me that this became... basically anyone whose kid is not in the public schools, so private school, Catholic school, charter school, homeschooling, they're kind of being questioned and they're being looked at as, are you getting the same quality education as the public schools offer? That's the part that I want to dive deeper into with you.
Oh, happy to. Sure. Do you want me to jump in?
Sure. No, go for it. Yeah, because I think that's the part that people feel like, wait a minute, why are we saying that public schools have the gold standard and that we have to match that in other sectors, again, like the ones I just mentioned?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's not what we're requiring here. So I'm very happy to have the opportunity to clarify that. I know opponents of the bill have been trying to sort of muddy the waters and cause confusion and, you know, make people concerned. So I'm really grateful you invited me on to clarify this. Equivalent instruction as defined in our bill is the current law. So it's saying every child has to be enrolled in the public school unless you're providing equivalent education to, and it lists the subject areas as provided in the public schools. That's the existing law, and there's just no, there's no mechanism for enforcement or oversight or accountability currently. So we kept that, and then we added to our statute something that does not exist right now, which is specifically a definition for non-public school, so that we could differentiate between kids who are in public school, kids who are in non-public school, and then children who are homeschooled. Because right now, it's either public school or basically anything else, so that we could then differentiate all of the additional sort of pieces of oversight we're looking at are for kids who are in no school setting. They're not in public school, and they're not in non-public school. The piece is might strike folks as a little different is current law requires you to appear in person to register your child for public school one time. Usually for it sounds like probably for you and for me, it was when my children enrolled in kindergarten.
Sure.
And we are required to go do that in person. We are now saying for every child enrolling in any setting, that very first time parents have to appear in person to fill out that form. We're trying to create, we're trying to prevent the creation of any loopholes. We're saying you're enrolling in a non-public school, but really your child's never going to show up at a non-public school and you're just going to use that loophole if there's no accountability over there and really keep your child home and out of sort of public view.
Okay. Just so that I continue to kind of like follow along with you. So if I'm understanding you correctly, are you saying that beyond just the very first time, because you're right, in kindergarten or whenever you transferred into Connecticut and you enrolled your kid into school, besides that first time, are you talking about a yearly kind of, hey, we're still enrolled in public schools this year? Or no, actually, we decided to go private. And then every year that they are not in the public schools, you have that kind of check-in. Is that what you're saying?
No, just that first time. And then if there's a change of status, so if you're in the private schools and you exit your child for what the law calls equivalent instruction, but really is sort of the legal phrase for homeschooling, then you would have to fill out the form also to indicate now your child will be homeschooled. But there's no annual appearing in person for anyone, not for our homeschoolers either.
Okay. So, okay. So I guess I'm trying to understand what's like how this is different than now. So, and maybe I'm not understanding it. So feel free to like jump in and tell me that I'm not getting it, because I'm just thinking of when I was enrolled in the Fairfield Public Schools. And again, certainly not trying to put the focus on me, but sometimes if I use a concrete example, it makes it more understandable, not just for me, but for the listeners to get this. So when I was in the public schools, my eighth grade year, I did not enroll in Fairfield Ward. I went to Laurelton. And how is the law, if this were to pass, how is that different than what I had to do, which was my parents saying, hey, we're moving Melissa to Laurelton. She's not going to go to Fairfield Ward. Once that was made clear, what would that, I guess, mean after that? What's different, I guess, with this law?
Nothing. Your parents would let the school know that you are exiting public school for private school. And then they would just include like your acceptance letter, for example, to Laurelton, just to show, in fact, my child will be going to this other school.
Okay.
And that's it. So I guess that piece of paper just confirming you're going to another school is new. That's it. We're trying to prevent children from sort of disappearing. We have a system right now where if you don't show up again, There's no enforcement. There's really no opportunity for anyone to know where those kids are. So we have right now thousands of kids in our state that nobody knows about, and it just makes it easy. And I just want to be so clear, like the vast majority of those people are doing incredibly wonderful things for their children, and we're not trying to look at those people with suspicion. We just want to prevent people who do have known cases of abuse or neglect from being able to easily hide their children.
We're chatting with Representative Jen Leeper, who is the chair of the Education Committee, and we're looking at one of the biggest turnouts for public hearings, at least this week, if not so far this session, and it has to do with this bill regarding equivalent instruction. I'm sorry, Representative Leeper, I'm really not getting it. I'm understanding, obviously, what you're saying. You're not explaining it well. You are. I guess I was kind of given the impression that it's not as simple as just saying one time, hey, I'm transferring my kid to do a private school, a charter school, or I'm going to be doing homeschooling, like a one and done. My understanding was we're also kind of checking to see if any type of schooling that's not public schooling is up to the standard of what Connecticut's public schools are at. That's what I've been told. That's not part of this legislation at all?
Not for non-public schools. Other than that one time, that's it for non-public schools. The bill really is focused on the kids who... So we have a framework for public schools. There's a framework for non-public schools. There is no framework for kids who are being educated at home. So we are trying to just create the lightest touch where families who are doing the right thing, these are very easy hurdles to clear. But folks who are not doing right by their children, we're hoping that this system would be just enough, right, to trip them up a little and invite some additional accountability and oversight for children. And so for our kids who are in private school, it's that one time. And then the non-public school picks it up from there because they're already reporting annually their enrollment counts and to the State Department of Ed, and there's eyes on those kids. The child welfare system is built around the assumption that children are in school every day being seen. And so when you remove that, then as we've seen, DCF doesn't have any tools to ensure those children are okay.
Okay.
And so that's the goal.
Okay, so I got that. So then I guess let's move to the equivalent instruction part of this, which, as you mentioned, is really for the homeschooling. Who's determining what is good education for homeschooling? Like, who determines that?
We're not even doing that. We're not analyzing what they're doing. We are going from a system where we literally have nothing, and trying to create something is very difficult, as you saw, right, with the turnout for our public hearing. And so we're not even saying we're approving your curriculum or we're analyzing what your child's doing. We are just asking, you have to show us that you are in fact doing something.
Totally.
So we've given a few options.
Yeah. What are they showing you? That maybe that's a better way of asking it. So to your point, you know, so what do they have to show you?
So we've given a few options. We've said that you can meet the criteria of demonstrating equivalent instruction by either submitting a portfolio, and this, we are asking SDE to create guidance around what, like, would meet the standard for a portfolio or what could be included in a portfolio. And we want some flexibility there because we recognize we also have children being homeschooled because they have some learning disabilities or some special needs. And we want some flexibility for them to have a system that doesn't, you know, be unintentionally punitive for kids who are learning differently. So we have the portfolio review. Then we said you could meet the criteria by taking the state mastery exam. In Connecticut, that's the Smarter Balanced Assessment. Or you could take a nationally normed assessment. There's a lot of those types of assessments that the home school community already participates in. We said you could submit the transcripts from any online courses you might taking, because we know there's a lot of online opportunities that our homeschool community takes advantage of, or when you take your GED, and that's sort of your pathway out, because that signifies you're usually done with your homeschooling education.
Okay.
So we tried to give choices, and this is modeled after what Vermont does, after what New Hampshire does.
Okay. So you want to have more ways of just, again, having that check, and not even in the sense that kids are being abused or neglected, but to know that they also are educationally continuing moving forward and can be, I would think, beneficial when they're adults in the workforce and just as human beings. Right. Am I understanding this better as to like what you're asking
Absolutely.
For?
Absolutely.
Okay. And again, even that, I don't 1,000% hate that concept. I think it makes sense. And again, you're giving different options to do so. I guess where I and again, I kind of push back only because I talk to a lot of education experts, as you know, like the Fran Rabinowitzes of the world, the Beth Buys. I've even had the commissioner for the Department of Ed on many times. And the thing that I guess trips me up a little bit, Representative Leeper, is that we don't even really have it totally right with our public schools right now. Our literacy, I know we just rolled out a couple years ago that new kind of program for K through three. We want to expand it to four through nine. And Fran Rabinowitz is like, wait a minute, we're still trying to figure out if this is even the right move for the younger kids, let alone to expand it. I just find that we haven't even really figured out what, and like, are the testing, like, is that really working to the best of its ability for our public schools? So I guess that's kind of my bigger thing, is who's figuring out what those standards are. So like the transcripts, I get that from online opportunities, but like the state tests or the exams or the standard for a portfolio, I don't know who's setting that and what kind of that gold standard is. I guess that's where I'm a little tripped up.
Sure. So I would say, of course, our public schools are not perfect. Absolutely. And every other bill we take up in the Education Committee and the vast majority of our entire state budget goes towards our schools and better serving our children. So I am absolutely not trying to pretend that everything that's happening in our public schools is perfect. I also think that doesn't mean we can't also focus on these kids right now who there's really just a black box and there's no oversight. And again, I want to say, of course, if you're in a pod and you're in a community, you're doing a beautiful job by your children, but there's no guarantee that kids actually have access to those sort of things. So we're not even setting a standard, truthfully. This is just the smallest little hurdle that if you don't submit any of these things, then there would be follow-up saying, oh, hey, you didn't meet this demonstration. And so we think that the families who are doing all of these things for their children will have no problem making sure that they are able to submit one of these five things. But for families that we think are hiding their child because of neglect and abuse, that this is just a hurdle enough to trip them up so that there could be some additional interaction with that family and oversight for that child. But we're not saying, oh, if you don't get an XYZ score on the state assessment, then anything. We're not doing that. We're asking SE just to provide guidance on what could be included in the portfolio. We think that they're the appropriate entity to provide that sort of educational guidance, not us as the legislature, which is why we wouldn't put it in statute. We're just saying you have to show, those are, I think, the words, you have to show that you had a portfolio, if that's the path you choose. Again, you don't have to choose the portfolio path. You could choose to take the Iowa exam, for example, which is a popular exam amongst homeschoolers.
If they don't provide it, given if this passes, what happens? Does DCF go, or like what happens if they don't provide it?
So if they don't provide it, then the school would follow up saying, oh, you haven't submitted this yet. And if they really still don't hear from the family, then it would be a referral for educational neglect. And right now, educational neglect is really based only on what's required in the public schools. So if you are not truant, there's really nothing for DCF to do because you're not breaking any laws. Right. There's no criteria for homeschoolers. So you don't have to provide any documentation. You don't have to show that you've been educating your child. There is nothing there for DCF to interact with when you're not in the public schools or even private school, because there's nothing to show.
Right. I hear that. I think and again, I know I've had this conversation with Christina Gio as well, who's the, acting child advocate, and she comes on the show pretty frequently. And the one thing that I've said to her is, what you're saying, I think, again, logically, I totally hear you, Representative Leeper, and I don't even disagree with what you're saying. I think probably same kind of idea from last year when that Waterbury case happened. The number one thing I heard from homeschooling parents was that they feel like whenever something awful happens, they're the scapegoat. And I guess my question, which I don't know if this would really fall under you guys because you're education committee, but I think they have to see that it's not just them getting fixed. I think we have to also see that DCF is being really looked at. I mean, I think that's really one of the missing pieces here. And I think there'd be a lot more openness to a reporting system, or a little bit more, if we actually saw the other side being really scrutinized. And I'm not even saying the workers, but the systems. I mean, they have just not worked for a very long time. And I think that's the part of this that gets missed is that DCF continues to fail. The leadership has not been solid. The systems have not worked. And I have a friend who works in DCF, so I'm not knocking the workers, but it has failed many times. And I think that's the part of the conversation that just doesn't get addressed by the legislature.
I will say we have a whole separate committee just on DCF. That's the Children's Committee, and they had several bills about reforming DCF because I think we all share those concerns. Absolutely. The Education Committee does not have oversight over DCF. We are just the education piece. So we've been working with our colleagues in the Children's Committee to try to create a system where we're closing those holes. I know that they're working on, you know, staffing ratios. The turnover, I'm sure, as you know, in DCF is vast. And I can't really imagine a more difficult job, right, than being a DCF caseworker. And so there are reforms happening over there. And I got this sense from a lot of the public hearing, too. Because in this one bill, we're not fixing every single thing, people are opposed. But, you know, we're investing millions in having what is called the LEAP program, where we're training people in community to go door to door to students who aren't coming to school, engage with those families, engage with those students who are truant to get them back in, because we recognize truancy is a huge problem. We're doing a whole bunch of these pieces. None of them are easy fixes, but they just don't happen to all be in this one single bill.
Representative Leeper, I want to thank you so much for coming on and talking about House Bill 5468, an act concerning the provision of equivalent instruction. And we certainly will see what happens next with the bill and follow along and keep people updated. Thank you so much for your time. And again, Representative Leeper from right here in the Fairfield area is the chair of the Education Committee. We'll link the full language of the bill as well to her podcast on our website, voiceofct.com.